Okay, my name is Hope. I'm eating breakfast in Portage Park. And you're listening to Insider Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Harper. Enjoy the breakfast in Portage Park. I hope it's a good one. Thanks for listening. Good morning. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. Happy to be here with you today. This is show number 780. And what we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Of course, say hello to us online anywhere you can. You can go on to Twitter. What a lovely place Twitter is these days. Instagram, Facebook, search for Outside the Loop Radio. And check out the audio archives through OutsideTheLoopRadio.com or WGNRadio.com, or get the podcast of the program for free. Bob Ferguson is the engineer on duty today. We say hello to Fergie, and we say hello to Colin Seaman, who for now is the producer of the show. Good morning, Colin.
Good morning, Mike.
I said for now because, and I'm trying not to get choked up here, today is your last show as producer of Outside the Loop.
Yes, it is. Thanks for playing some harps.
You got it. Harper is Colin's daughter. We should say that.
Yes, and that was, gave me on the feels listening to her younger self.
I know, right?
Saying
right.
Good morning to you.
That's something Jenny and I have talked about with our boys, is that, you know, we have so much video and we have so many pictures, but, you know, look, I do audio a lot for my career, and so she said, you know, it's kind of cool just to hear their voices, just to capture their voices. And then we've done that, you know, on the voice memo app on our phones and played them back a few years later, and it's like, oh, you know,
per that app or whatever recording device you have, they're everywhere right now, right?
Yeah.
You should, you know, parents, I'm just saying, if you're in the fog of it, like new parents, whatever, just record the sounds. It's the set, like the sound of a kid 4 months old on a bottle. There's like, there's that moment, right? There's the first, there's the, like the early laughs.
Yep.
There's all the stuff that's there that's not just necessarily like, they said a word. That is also really cool. Like, I love recording the fits personally, like the tantrums. I'll be like, this is so many. This is so great to be listening to. And two, you are going to love listening to this when you are 18, because daddy's bringing it back.
I agree. With all the video and audio and pictures, I'm thinking to myself, boy, this rehearsal dinner video is going to be epic, because I'm bringing it all back. I'm bringing it all back. So that'll be something. Well, we can't bring you back, unfortunately. Colin, you are, again, moving on to great things with your career. So we're very excited for you. And it's okay to cry. I'm telling you this. I know this. So when I cry, it's okay, but it's okay for you to cry too.
It's okay for anybody to cry, number one. Be in touch with their feels and feel all the feels you need to feel for you to be, you feeling. Know, okay. Yeah. That's nice of you to say. But like I said last week, man, I'll still be sending you stuff, rabbit holes to go down, show intros. They won't just be my kids.
Right.
I'll be different places in the city to send you, be like, hey, there's the show. You should do this thing. You should listen to the show, number one, but record this little like 5 second line. And you'll be on the radio.
You'll be like our guy on the inside, right? Like if you like run into people, if you run into your favorite alderman on the street, you can, you know, pull out the phone and hit record and then try to do an impromptu interview. Then send that audio to me so we can put that out there for the masses.
Sure. Yeah, I can do that. Maybe. What's on the show today?
Oh, Colin, I'm glad you asked. This isn't a tribute to you. Oh, it's not a tribute to you. Okay, I'm seeing what we're doing here. We actually have a lot to do, and I shouldn't say that like we normally don't. Like, we actually today have a lot to do. No, we have a great show for you today. We'll be later on looking at the history of this really interesting era in history called the Black Fives era, where you had these
African-American basketball teams prior to the NBA. So we're thinking like early 20th century here, about up until the mid-20th century. And these Black Fives teams here in Chicago and Los Angeles, etc., really incredible impact when it comes to the game today. So we'll talk about that. We'll also get a look at the environment. We'll talk about a very important environmental update with a new law that was signed recently. And we will learn the secret history of Reverend Marvin Yancey. He is the late, great Marvin Yancey, gospel music from right here in Chicago. Stay tuned. It's all coming up today on Outside the Loop. We miss Colin, and it's okay to cry. Chicago has a rich history when it comes to sports, especially basketball. When you think of all the great players who are from this area or who made a name for themselves here. The period known as the Black Fives era between 1904 and 1946 featured a thriving collection of teams consisting of black basketball players, and they helped pave the way for future generations of pro basketball athletes. Ade Adeniji is a freelance journalist and contributor to thetribe.com, and he recently wrote a piece called How Black Chicago Helped Birth the Black Fives, the Negro League of Hoops. Ade Adeniji is here with us on Outside the Loop today. Ade, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Excited to talk about this.
Let's talk about the Black Fives era here. So this is, I think, fascinating. So this era consisted of teams that were here in Chicago, but other cities. How did all this start?
So it started in the early 1900s. As you might know, basketball started in the late 1800s, but it really was introduced to African-Americans in the early 20th century by a black physical education professor at Howard University. And it sort of spread like wildfire to other cities, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Los Angeles. All around the country, there were all these different teams that existed for the 50 years prior to the NBA integrating in 1946.
And if you look at, you know, the timeline of history here, I mean, that is really, in terms of race relations in the United States, it was definitely a rocky time. You had the Jim Crow era flourishing in the South especially. And so the fact that this era gave birth to Black Fives teams, a few here in Chicago, this was significant because it's not like every place in the United States was really accepting of the squads that were being put out on the court.
Exactly. So you can also think of the Black Fives as sort of another one of those responses to the de jure segregation in the South and the de facto segregation in the North.
And, you know, we think about here in Chicago what was happening, and let's go to 1913.
Yeah.
That's an important year. As you write, you say that the YMCA, the Wabash YMCA, was built, and it sort of became like this social center for African Americans who moved to Chicago during the Great Migration. And also at this YMCA, this helped put black basketball on the map, didn't it?
Yeah, so this Jewish philanthropist and businessman, he was the founder of Sears and Roebuck, Julius Rosenwald, sort of spent some time building all these different YMCAs and different black city centers, where it wasn't just sort of a place for people to come and congregate, but they could also sort of engage in social programs. In fact, Negro History Week, which later became Black History Month, was founded in the Wabash Y in Chicago. But in terms of basketball, we consider it one of the first major spaces indoors for basketball.
Which is, it's incredible, right here in Chicago. And so you had some teams that were playing during this Black Fives era here in Chicago. Two of them that you write about, the Harlem Clowns, which I think is funny because Harlem Clowns, Harlem, not New York, but they were here in Chicago. They were here in Chicago. And the Savoy Big Five. These were kind of the two big clubs when we talk about Black Fives teams.
Exactly. So the Savoy Big Five bear the name of the Savoy Ballroom, which existed until the 1970s on the South Side. And so Savoy was sort of another one of these cultural centers where not just basketball took place, but also there was jazz, there was dance, people like Duke Ellington, Ella Fitzgerald, all came and sort of descended upon the center. So you'd have maybe double headers of games, and then afterwards, you know, people would just take the court and there would be musical performances. So it really was this Black cultural mecca. The Savoy Big Five, the team, they played at, you know, this was their home court, but then they also traveled around the country competing against other all Black Five teams. And then also against white competition. So these Black Five teams thrived, you know, playing against each other, but then also went on the road against white competition and usually did quite well as well. And the Harlem Clowns, the one cool thing I found out about them is that their star was this guy, Al Run Pullins, a 5'8". A lot of these players were very short. You know, think about a 5'8" today yeah. would be like, I don't know, Muggsy Bogues.
Right, right.
But, you know, he came from Louisiana and then moved to Southside Chicago when he was 6 and ended up being a star of Wendell Phillips High School, which was a all-Black high school that was the first Black high school to win the city championship in Chicago in 1928. Al Run Pullins later founded the Harlem Clowns, who, you know, again, one of those teams that thrived in Black Five leagues, but then also he traveled as far wide as Canada and Japan, also competing.
Wow. And is this right that part of the Savoy Big Five became the Harlem Globetrotters?
Yeah, so some of that history in terms of the transition from one team to another is a little complicated, but I guess the best way to understand it is that there was sort of a faction of the Savoy Big Five that later broke off and became the Harlem Globetrotters, which were started in Chicago, not New York, despite the name. This businessman, Al Saperstein, called them that because, you know, sort of Harlem was known as sort of a Black center, so he thought that it would generate more recognition for the team.
Wow. And so when these teams would go out on the road, we talked about that earlier, but, you know, they're going to parts yeah. of the country that aren't really welcoming when it comes to Black folks during this time in the 20th century. And so, you know, the style of play, you know, we think about the Harlem Globetrotters and we think, oh boy, boy, you know, they kind of throw the ball around, they twirl it, they behind the back and all this stuff. And it's interesting to see the evolution or the origin of that, really, because they were afraid to run up the score on these white teams that they were playing because they had to get out of there safely.
Exactly. So I spoke to Pullin's daughter and granddaughter, and they were really adamant about this point. Like you said, sort of there's an impression that maybe there's a little bit of buffoonery, a little bit more performance than sort of formal basketball. But she really was, they were really adamant at sort of correcting the record that, no, this was a life and death situation. Well, number one, it was smart business. They couldn't just run up the score. They had to sort of make it close as they were playing these white teams that they usually, you know, were much more talented than. But then also, well, if you win and you run off the store by a lot, hey, you might trigger something as bad as a race ride. So it really was a survival tactic, you know, the passing, the dribbling. But what I really, you know, really struck me about this piece is that it really just goes to show you it's one of those another examples of Black folks sort of, you know, navigating this system and finding a way to find humanity, but also leave with our bodies intact.
Yeah, it was like entertaining. Right. And the legacy of that, we talk about, oh, we watched the Harlem Globetrotters or teams like that. And boy, aren't they fun to watch. But that was sort of born out of necessity, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yep. Necessity. I think it's just good to reframe it, you know, because I think even Black Americans themselves, they might come to a conclusion about that kind of performance. But I think it's important for, you know, everyone to understand that, no, this was a conscious strategy. They still were extremely entertaining and they were also, you know, very capable and talented.
So what ultimately is the legacy of this Black Fives era when we think about not only basketball, but for race in this country? What do you think overall the legacy is here?
Well, I think these days you see, you know, people like LeBron James, Steph Curry, all the prominent players today speaking up and speaking out. And then you get the detractors, people that are, you know, telling these players to shut up and dribble or any other invective you might see around there. Really, you know, the Black Fives goes to show you that these athletes were also activists in their own area. They were also businessmen. They were also entrepreneurs. So the notion that a Black athlete could just get on the court and that's all he could be, you know, that's never been the story of Black sports.
It's a really interesting story and a great read. The piece, again, up at thetribe.com called How Black Chicago Helped Birth the Black Fives, the Negro League of Hoops. It is written by Ade Adeniji, who is a journalist and a contributor to thetribe.com. Ade, this is a great story, and I think it's an important story that we should know, and maybe a lot of us don't, but I'm happy that you're bringing this story to the forefront, and thank you for telling the story, and thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure. It's been a blast.
It took a few years, but last week, the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act, also known as CEJA, became law in Illinois. Here on Outside the Loop, we've been looking at this through the years as previous attempts to pass this legislation fell short, but today things are different. Colleen Smith is the Deputy Director of the Illinois Environmental Council. You could check them out online, ilenviro.org. They are advocating for environmentally friendly policies here in our state. And Colleen is with us once again here on Outside the Loop. Colleen, this is a very happy conversation we're having here.
It is. Thanks so much for having me, Mike. And it feels so good to hear you say that the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act is now the law of the land here in Illinois. After you pointed out, we've been fighting for this for years, and to have it be realized is so great. We're really excited that this day has finally come.
Yeah, this is pretty exciting. This law now really establishes Illinois as a leader when it comes to climate, when it comes to transitioning away from fossil fuels, but also for providing jobs. I mean, can you just put in context, I mean, how big of a deal is this legislation, is this law now?
To your point, this is really nation leading on a comprehensive and equitable approach to addressing climate change. I'm excited because it's a story about the power of people and the environmental community standing up to fossil fuel interests and big utilities and winning. I mean, we have taken the steps necessary to put Illinois on the path to 100% clean energy future by achieving meaningful emissions reductions in the near term. And as you said, we're going to create hundreds of thousands of good paying jobs and wealth opportunities and hold utilities accountable. It's a huge bill and we're going to be implementing it for a long time, but it is really a new vision and a new day here in Illinois.
So yeah, so let's talk about this bill. And like you say, it's a big bill. There's a lot in it. So it's impossible to go through every aspect of this legislation, of this law now. But in terms of what we might see, you know, tangibly, the things that will affect us, what are some of those things that we might feel early on as residents of the state?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mike. I'd say one of the first things that we're going to see is how we're enacting tough utility accountability measures with CEJA. As you've known, following this issue for several years, for too long, policy has been written by utility companies, not driven by people for people. And so pretty early on here, we're going to see a new way of rate making that drives investment into communities in a way that it needs to for our climate, for public health, and for equity-driven investment. So that's something that's really exciting and will be right off the bat, as well as significant protections for low-income customers, expanded energy efficiency programs. I'm really excited because I know throughout the state of Illinois, there's been so much interest in solar energy, and we've been facing this cliff for several years. We're about to expand our renewable energy in Illinois on just a massive scale. And so as a homeowner, you're going to be able to reap these benefits of new clean energy, more affordable ways to support a clean energy future and what that means for you and your family.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. And I was going to ask you specifically this law now, how it kind of gets the average citizen of Illinois to make the move to green energy. But it sounds like you mentioned some things right there, that there are some incentives. There are now easier ways to do that. You mentioned solar. And we've talked about how solar has been very popular in this state, but it does seem that there are some avenues that will allow the average homeowner, the average family, to make more of a move or a transition to green energy here.
Yes, absolutely. I think there's a couple key things. One is a great program called Solar for All, which helps communities who and households who have not been able to access solar traditionally. It was a program created under the last energy bill, is going to increase up to 4 times. So we'll just see a huge expansion of that program and more availability for homeowners to take part in solar, as well as new financing mechanisms that will help offset the costs of solar for homeowners. Those are just some immediate opportunities that will be developed. And we're going to see solar on in new kinds of projects. You know, we've had community solar over the last couple years. We're going to see more community-driven community solar. We're also going to see more solar on schools. So the amount of economic investment and job growth that we had been seeing after the last energy bill that kind of came to a halt is really just going to take off again with the passage of CEJA.
Utilities. Let's briefly talk about utilities. That has been sort of a sticking point all throughout these negotiations over the past few years when it comes to this law. Where are we with utilities? Will there be some accountability? I feel like we've seen a lot about utilities in the news locally. Where does this law now stand when it comes to regulating utilities in the state?
Well, there's a very robust accountability and ethics provisions under CEJA, which is great because the utilities didn't write this bill, right? The people of Illinois developed what this vision should look like. And that's a huge feat in Illinois to not have the utilities be the ones drafting the policy that regulates them. So there's a couple key things. You know, we're going to have an established ethics and accountability division with a utility ethics monitor. So kind of a watchdog, if you will, to over the utilities, which is so, so important. And we're also going to require the ICC to investigate whether ComEd did misappropriate ratepayer funds. There are other key ethic provisions to make sure that there's enhanced disclosure, more reporting. We really need greater transparency, not just the utilities, but in the full rate making process to make sure that the ratepayers of Illinois are treated fairly by the utilities.
Now, we're kind of in a celebration mode, which is great because this legislation is now law, but are there areas where more can be done when we look at our environment, making policy, making environmentally friendly policy? What should we keep an eye on going forward here, even as we're celebrating the passage of CEJA?
Well, there's always more work to be done, and there's hard work ahead to make this successful in implementation. This bill is going to have the most progressive and aggressive diversity mandates for any renewable program in the country. But we're going to need to make sure that that is materialized. As we look towards the next several years of implementing this big bill and making sure that we're holding utilities accountable, delivering on good paying jobs, and expanding renewable energy throughout the state, we also have an opportunity to leverage action by the city of Chicago, to look at the federal government right now, poised to potentially take its biggest action on climate change through infrastructure and the Build Back Better Act. So in order to fight climate change at the scale it deserves, we're going to need to continue to address this from every level of government, to not just tackle our power sector, but to continue to do more on transportation and nature-based climate solutions. It's a big problem that's going to require big solutions. And so as we look to celebrate the passage of this historic legislation and implement CEJA, there's certainly more work to be done.
The work continues, but the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act is now law in Illinois, and that is very exciting. We'll see how this unfolds, and I'm sure that we will talk more, Colleen, about environmentally friendly policy in our state in the future. Colleen Smith is the deputy director of the Illinois Environmental Council. They are online at ilenviro.org. Colleen, thank you so much for all of your hard work with CEJA and all of these environmentally important issues. And thanks for talking to us today.
Thanks so much. I can't wait to be back on the show talking about all of the successes from the implementation of CEJA.
Chicago Reader, you will see the column The Secret History of Chicago Music. It is hand-drawn by local musician, music historian, and artist Plastic Crime Wave. He's also known as Steve Krakow. This strip profiles a local musician or a band who never quite made it to the big time. So right now, let's dim those lights. Let's fire up the old hi-fi as we travel to Chicago's Ukrainian Village neighborhood and enter
The Secret History of Chicago Music.
Yes, connecting across town to the lair of an apartment of Mr. Steve Krakow, also known as Plastic Crime Wave himself, the author of The Secret History of Chicago Music. You can check that out on chicagoreader.com. And this week, Steve, we are getting all kinds of churched up. We are saying our prayers because we are hearing tunes from Reverend Marvin Yancey. We are getting spiritual.
Yes. Even though I'm, you know, not a card-carrying Jesus follower, being born of the Jewish faith, I really do love gospel music, and I really do love really any music that is like people who are injecting the spirit into it, you know, and I think a lot of people are like that. And, you know, gospel is like the raw foundation for so many kinds of music.
So we are talking about Reverend Marvin Yancey here. He is born in Chicago in 1950, and he's coming up in an environment where, you know, he's hearing this music. His father was a minister and his mom was a singer. So he's in churches and he's getting this music at home, and he's growing up with this stuff.
Totally. You know, it's funny because I cover so many artists that were sort of, you know, they first performed in the church and they were first in the choir, you know, gospel choir or something like that. And a lot of them seem to outgrow it. He just stuck with it, you know. And like when his father passed, he actually became the pastor at the church as well. So he definitely was a man of the faith first and foremost. That said, he was married multiple times and had multiple, I think, a child out of wedlock as well. But, you know, like most of these men of God, sometimes, you know, you need it because you got some sin in your life and on your brain. So you got to turn to the higher power to turn you away and save you, right?
Yeah, that's how it goes. Absolutely. Yeah. Sure. Music will save us all.
I think of guys like Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis, who were like, you know, both did gospel albums, but they were such sinful dudes that they just needed, I think, to have the church in their life to just keep them grounded. And I'm all for it. You know, I'm all for it. If it keeps a gun out of your hand, you know, or mirroring your 14-year-old cousin, Jerry Lee, whatever. But I digress.
Yeah. Well, the music industry itself doesn't really lend itself to, you know, quality, always quality activities and the straight and narrow. There's a lot of opportunity for divergence there.
Sure. And Marvin Yancey was, he was in the sort of secular music industry as well.
He goes on to study here at the Moody Bible Institute. And like you said, when his father died in 1977, Marvin Yancey inherited his position, his father's position, leading the congregation at the Fountain of Life Baptist Church. So he was preaching, but also he was playing piano. Is that right?
Yeah. So, like, you know, it was pretty organic, I think, how he came into it all. He was backing gospel guys when they would come to town on piano. And then I think he kind of got lured into the, you know, the real music industry via that, you know.
Right. And he also is backing, like you say, some musicians, but he's backing this famous gospel group called the Caravans at a Black Expo presented by none other than Reverend Jesse Jackson. How about that?
Yeah, and that's an interesting, there's an LP that comes from basically from that event. It was Operation Breadbasket, which became PUSH, I guess, later on, was the acronym. But yeah, there's an LP, and like Jesse's on the cover for sure. He got himself on there. Yeah, it's a pretty funky little tune, too, that they do of Mr. Yancey's. My father's rich. And how the land. He holds the world in the palm of his hand. Rubies and diamonds, silver and gold. I'm a child of the king. Wherever I go. It was actually Jesse Jackson's brother who he was a vocalist, which I did not know, Chuck Jackson. And he saw Yancey perform with the Caravans and was like, I gotta lure you into, you know, into doing some like soul music, basically. So he took him to like Jerry Butler had like a pretty famous like songwriting workshop where like a lot of talent sort of came up that he would host in the day.
So Reverend Marvin Yancey is going on to write some tunes. He is going to keep on performing.
Yeah, he runs off with Jesse Jackson's brother.
Yeah, right. he's writing some funky tunes.
They started a group called the Independents, which are pretty good. Great harmonies and everything like that. And then, yeah, they basically became like a songwriting team. Like, I guess it was proposed they were going to write like a bunch of songs for Aretha Franklin, and it didn't happen, but it's sort of like they got a publishing deal or, you know, for their songwriting, and they were kind of like off and running.
And then Marvin Yancey begins to work with this artist named Natalie Cole, which we know that name, don't we?
Yeah, this is the brush with fame here that we're getting to. He was basically assigned her as sort of like a project, you know, to write some songs for her, help. She was very, you know, young. This is like 1974. So they actually went into Curtis Mayfield's label studios and like tried to cut some demos and such, you know. Basically they were like, see what you can do with this artist, you know, here. She was so new, and it ended up being a pretty fruitful collaboration in a number of ways.
Of course, Natalie Cole, the daughter of Nat King Cole, if you didn't know, and Natalie Cole goes on to become a star in her own right. So, all right, this is unfortunate. He is taken from this planet pretty early, isn't he?
Yeah, it's sad because like so he has these hits with Natalie Cole. I think that a lot of people don't know about so much in the late 70s, she was winning Grammys even then, like 1976 and 1977. So like I think a lot of people equate her more with the 80s and, you know, the duet with her father and, you know, the kind of creepy overdubbed duet with her father and such. Yeah. But yeah, she was having hits there in the 70s, and they actually married and had a child. But yeah, and then he kind of got his own career going in like 79. And then, yeah, 1985, you know, he was really young. He was only, I believe he was only like, you know, 35. They took him, that the Lord took him from us.
Oh, boy. So he was only, yeah, in his mid-30s, and he passes away. And Jesse Jackson, as you write here, officiated Reverend Marvin Yancey's funeral at the Fellowship Missionary Baptist Church, which is kind of full circle, but it's really sad. I mean, he has so much, you know, great music that he leaves behind, but in his mid 30s, 34, 35, it's just, that's way, way, way too early.
Yeah. And his own career was, it's sad because it was just starting. You know, he recorded like one solo album in 1985 called Heavy Load. It got great reviews and sort of bringing gospel music into the new age. And, that's like the only one he got to record, you know. I feel like it was sort of like a journey for him to get there, you know, like through the music industry and coming up in gospel. And yeah, definitely taken too young.
Well, the music lives on. Reverend Marvin Yancey is who we are talking about today. And you can go to chicagoreader.com to check out the full story of this artist from here in Chicago that maybe you never knew about, or maybe you heard some other songs and you didn't know that he was on them. But the full story up at chicagoreader.com. Steve Krakow is the author of The Secret History of Chicago Music Strip in the Chicago Reader. He also does a hand drawing of the musician or artist that he is profiling. Steve, thanks as always for talking to us today, and you stay funky, soulful, and in the groove.
And most importantly, keep the faith.
I want to take this time to say thank you. Oh, you've been better to me than I've been to myself. I want to say
happy party.
Yes, the rap party for Outside the Loop show number 780, where for the last time, Colin and I will recap the show, offer some takeaways.
But maybe
sad over here.
Maybe you, listener, you'll join the rap party next time. I think we're breaking news here. You may take the rap party on the road, Mike.
Oh, yeah, we talked about that. I didn't know that I was doing that.
You should do that. You should just do that. You should absolutely take the rap party on the road. And therefore, it's not just my opinion as a producer. You could get a listener or another listener or your mom to give you some legitimate, like, how did you process today's show? I think you should definitely take this on the road. And listener, if you're listening in, one, thank you. Two, you really love the show. You listen this far into the program. Three, you should email Mike, info@outsidetheloopradio.com. You want to be part of the rap party? info@outsidetheloopradio.com. Say with the subject line, rap party. Mike could give you a call and say, like, what's going on? You want to talk about the show today?
Yeah. Well, okay. We just did some behind the scenes show brainstorming prep for everyone to hear.
I think you should take it on the road for sure. Okay. And then you can get like diversity of perspective, touch the listeners can touch you all through the sound of audio, you know?
I like it. Maybe get like a CTA bus driver, record it on the bus, not when they're driving though.
Well, you know, we all have Bluetooth headphones now, as long as it's a hands-free device.
Okay,
it's an excellent idea.
That's your parting sort of gift, your parting wisdom as you leave here after. I didn't know this until we talked before the show today. You produced over four years. It does not feel like it was 4 years. It feels like it went like that, you know?
Yeah.
Or maybe for you, it feels like 10. I don't know.
Well, no, the whole thing gets skewed with the pandemic.
Right.
But yeah, man. How long did Andy produce consecutively?
Consecutively.
So, like, he started and then he came back.
Right.
I've actually been giving him more credit than he deserves.
Oh.
Right. Because, like, there was a time where you just did it, right? When you were at LUW.
Right. Well, he was there for part of that, but not the whole thing.
Right.
Right.
So how many did he really produce?
A lot. I mean, he helped me start it.
Fine. So I got 213 to my name.
So he was probably, I started on GN at the end of 2014, and then he was there for all that until 2017,
So that's
right?
3 years.
Right.
So I may have more GN shows than he.
Right, but then when we started it in 2006.
Right, so he has the early stuff too. I know he probably beats me, but I'm actually now curious as to what his number is.
Well, I know Andy's listening, and I know Andy is firing me a text right now.
He should come out of retirement for this.
Okay.
the world has changed. We're all more connected than we thought we were, and he should return.
This is like the ultimate exit interview for you. You're just leaving it all on the table. Like, you know what, Mike? Call people, listeners for the rap party. Andy, you're going to produce this thing.
You should still do, like we talked about a long time ago, you should still do like the sounds from different places. I think that soundscapes from different different areas in Chicago. Like, people should submit that to you. Listeners, this was an idea we had. You literally take your phone or whatever recording device you have. If you're in a unique auditory space, is that how you say it?
Auditory, yeah.
Unique sounding space.
Yeah.
Just hit record and let it run for like a minute. Send it to Mike. Say like, this is what this place sounds like. Michael put it on the radio. I thought it was like a good way to capture soundscapes over Chicagoland. You should do that. Send it to him. info@outsidetheloopradio.com. Subject line, interesting Chicagoland audio soundscape.
We need a better name for that segment.
How about Chicago Found Sound?
Chicago Found Sound. Didn't we talk about that? I think we were sitting at a bar and we talked about that once, didn't we?
You should do it. I'm going to send you.
Okay.
If I'm in an interesting auditory space, I'm going to send it to you.
I like it. I like what you're doing. Well, thanks for brainstorming. Hey, this is great. Too bad you're leaving.
I'm setting you up for some stuff that you should run with.
I appreciate that, Colin. And did you know the history, by the way, of the Harlem Globetrotters and Black Fives teams? I did not know any of that.
Yeah, talk about
super cool.
Talk about white fragility. Like, oh, we can't beat them too bad. These white teams that we're playing kind of suck. So we gotta shift it down. Just beat them by 5. Beat them by 25.
Or you're right. And I would also say, how about racism? Right? I mean,
for sure. Yeah,
that had a huge part in this. And like I was saying, the Jim Crow era in the South, and you know, these teams, you'd go to the South, and boy, that was something to do that as an African-American basketball squad. But they did, and the origins of teams like the Harlem Globetrotters, I thought that was really cool. And also, you know, again, the lasting legacy of these teams is really deep, and I think it's important. And here in Chicago, the Wabash YMCA, that was really cool to learn about. And as well, Colin, as environmental update, I mean, some positive news. I feel like there is not really these days. We're not hearing a lot of great news. It seems like every day, boy, another thing that is not great. But with the passage of CEJA, that new law, I think that's a win.
Yeah, I'm going to quote or I'm going to credit David Roberts and the Volts podcast. Is a fantastic, fantastic show. But he did an episode on this, and he cited in his episode this particular study done by former Illinois Power Agency Director Mark Pruitt. Per one of the targets of this legislation, basically like getting to 40% renewable energy in Illinois by 2030. Do you know how much that's going to save people?
How much?
Total electricity savings? $1.2 billion.
Look at that. Look at that.
I'm not even like making the, this is good for the planet, everybody. I'm just trying to make the economic argument here. The cost of energy is going to go down, and it happens to benefit the planet. Personally, I would flip those two priorities and say we should just think about the planet first, but this is a very good thing for you. And just saying, Mike, the time to get an EV is now.
Electric vehicle.
Right.
Yeah.
This $4,000 credit that they're giving at the state level on top of the incentives that are already existing at the federal level, $16,500 on the table for you to jump over to an EV. Just saying. I don't know if the pot's going to get sweeter than that.
Well, Christmas is coming up. You can get me something nice.
I am not buying you a car.
Okay.
But you could buy yourself a car.
I could do that. I could do that, Colin. Well, now that you're not going to be here, maybe I'll just take that sweet Colin salary and put it towards my new EV.
That's right. You should buy, and there are incentives. I think incentives in this one and what's being proposed at the federal level to buy American. So just saying, it may actually be more money if you buy an American EV.
I like it. All right. Hey, thanks, man, for everything. Seriously. It's been a great, I guess, over 4 years. Like I said, didn't feel like it, doesn't feel like it. But you helped change the show for the better, and I think it sounds better. Not that it sounded awful before, but, you know, we're always growing and evolving here, which is great. And, Colin, you definitely had a role in that. So thank you for everything, man. And I guess I'm still going to talk to you. It's not like we're never going to see each other again.
But. Right. Yes. It's been a pleasure. Thank you. I remember when you asked me to do this at a wedding.
I do remember that. Yes. Yeah.
And it's been an interesting ride. We, like, again, it feels like forever ago with a pandemic, but we were in the old building. Like, I actually got to see the Trib Tower.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And there's been some cool stuff, and I think that this is the best program on this radio station.
Oh, thank
you. No offense to Lou. Lou is clearly second.
Lou, by the way, texted me, because we're in the studio today. I don't know if I said that, but we are in the studio. So we've been doing this show now ever since we moved to 5 a.m. We've been doing this remotely at home. And now we're, Colin, you said, let's come in today. Let's see Fergie. You wanted to see Bob Ferguson one more time. And Lou texted me today and he said, I can't believe you made Colin drag his ass out of bed and come to the station. I said, that was his idea, Lou.
Yeah, I have to turn in my ID and all this kind of stuff.
All right.
Everybody, you should turn to your neighbor or go like knock on your neighbor's door and say like, do you listen to Outside the Loop? It's legitimately one of the most authentic Chicago-centered news shows out there. And it has been for a long time. And per all the conversations we've had, even the one we had last week, that is not so much a regular thing anymore. This is still like a legitimate program on the radio that features local music. I don't know many that do that.
Yeah, that's true.
So there's like lots of things that tie this show into the fabric of Chicago and Chicagoland, and it should be propped up. And wherever you take the show in the future, I know it will continue to do that. And that's a great thing. And as I said, if Andy does not produce any more shows,
yeah,
I want to sit in front of him when you are eventually asked into the local media hall of fame, whatever that, you know, event is. I want to just sit in front of him because I had the last show.
Andy is texting me again. He's firing off a text to me right now as he's listening to this. So, well, I guess we're too legit to quit, Colin, but that doesn't apply to you, but you're legit, but you're resigning, but that's okay. I just wanted to say too legit to quit. Shout out to Oakland. Shout out to the Bay Area. Shout out to where Colin's from. See what I'm doing there?
Yeah, I do notice that you saved my like talking time to the end of the program, not the live program. You did give Andy a whole segment live over the radio when he left, but he's got more shows on me. It's cool.
You know what? We're almost out of tape here, Colin. The tape machine is almost done.
Right.
We gotta go.
Right.
Colin, we love you. Thank you. This is the wrap party for Outside the Loop show number 780.
Wrap party.
And that just about does it. Outside the Loop show number 780 is all wrapped up. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. I really appreciate it. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for being our engineer. One more time, thanks to Colin Seaman for all of his hard work producing Outside the Loop. We will miss Colin for sure. Have a fantastic week. I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop on 720 WGN.